It's a gamer. Da-da. We're here. It's a gamer. Da-da. This makes no fucking sense, but we're doing it anyway.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Make Me a Gamer, the procedurally generated podcast that's a roguelike for your ears. I'm your host, T-Man, and I'm here with not one, not two, but three guests. For the first time ever, I'm having multiple people on this podcast. First of all, we've got our usual second co-host.
Harvey Z, in the place to be.
There we go. Harvey's here as normal. Next up, we've got another person who has been on the podcast, although only once before. Introduce yourself.
Hey, everyone. I'm Slim.
Okay, there you go. So you've heard Slim before. He was a special guest when Harvey couldn't record a while back. I think it's been over a year now. Jesus. And finally, we've got a special guest who has not been on the podcast before, but has been referenced several times. Please give it up for Professor Q.
Hi. Yeah, I am slightly nervous because I'm not 100% caught up with these proceedings. So the fact that I've been referenced before sounds really ominous to me.
I mean, I don't think we've referenced you in a bad way.
And it hasn't been anything
where Harvey Z is concerned, you never quite know whether it was intended to be bad or not.
I mean, it's mostly been like XCOM and stuff, wouldn't you say, Harvey?
Yeah, it's been a while, actually, since Professor Q has had any adventures recently.
Yeah, I've been MIA.
Okay. Well, so as you can tell, we've kind of got, like, because of the quarantine and everything, we're all kind of stuck at home. And so I figured, why not get all my friends together so we can talk about a podcast and... Wait, talk about a podcast? Oh, Jesus. I clearly need to have my script together before I start this.
Yeah, we didn't even have a cold open, buddy.
I didn't want to do a cold open with four people. It ruins the surprise that there are multiple guests on this episode.
I thought that would enhance the surprise, because then it's also I got lumped in with these two guys.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Okay, fine. So Harvey Z is the regular co-host. He is not the other two.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I apologize, Harvey.
Thank you.
Okay. So the reason I've got us all together today is we have been playing Civilization VI. Now, Slim usually plays Civilization III, and I believe he is now addicted to VI in some way.
Yeah, maybe. A little bit.
And so, Professor... I can't remember, how much of VI did you play before we all started playing it as a group?
Oh, I dabbled. According to Steam, I may have more than dabbled, but I suspect that's just because I left it on at some point and it racked up a lot of hours. I could be one of those people who writes those reviews and like, oh, I don't really have strong opinions about this game, and there's like 3,000 hours spent on the game. But actually, in my case, I the 116 hours I've spent is all a lie.
Wow. 100. Wow. Yeah, I do that a lot too. Sometimes I'm worried that a number is inflated on my Steam account, where it's like, I didn't actually play it for that long. But then again, sometimes I did actually play it that long.
Do we actually look at the numbers, though? Like, is that enhance one's credibility?
Absolutely. How could it not? You've got to have cred.
Slim's just saying that because he's put in
an impressive 100 hours number over the past hours. Week. Yeah, 100 hours over the past week or so.
Does it track Civ 3 hours, or is that its own program?
No, it does. Would you like to know?
I would like to know. In comparison.
I am slightly...
It is 1,520 hours.
Okay.
1,500?
So,
what was that, Harvey?
1,500?
And 20.
Okay. Okay. Wow.
So actually, that's surprisingly low. That's only 15 times as many hours as you've spent in Civ 6 already. And it's only taken you a week.
And now you know how late I've been staying up playing Civ 6 over the past week.
Okay. Let's see. Where do we begin? So for me, I think we've talked about Civilization before, both on Slim's podcast and with Harvey.
This was one of my game of the years, actually.
Okay, shut up. That your technical game of the year. So, for me, I never played the original Civ. My first Civ was Civ 2, and I've played a little bit of each. I think the most I played was 5. Like, 2 and 3 I played a decent amount at the time, but and then 4 I think I played, like, twice. But 5 I played a lot. I think that was the first one I got all the expansions for. And then so 6 I got for the Switch, played it once, and didn't like how tiny everything was. And the mouse controls are much better than the Joy-Con controls. So I didn't play it again until we started playing it as a group to for something to do during the quarantine. So... Harvey Z, what's your history with Civ?
So with Civ, I think I joined in on you guys back in college. I'd heard about the Civilization franchise and got into Civ 4. Civ 5 is when we actually started playing, I think. But for me, my favorite has always been, like, now Civ 6. I know we jokingly said Game of the Year and stuff like that, technically. But I remembered actually doing a review for this podcast of where Civilization 6 was okay, but with the expansion, I actually really like it a lot.
Yeah, I haven't played with the expansion yet because I'm waiting for it to go on sale.
It will.
Yeah, I mean, Civ always goes on sale.
Which is the first expansion, Harvey, that you like a lot?
Yeah, the governor's features and everything. I feel like it really changes.
What's it called? What's the name of the expansion? Right,
I think it's Rise and Fall.
Got it. Thanks.
I think you have it, Slim.
I don't, because I just bought... Oh, no, you're right. I did buy this before. When I tried... when I was starting my game, when we were loading everything up, like, as a single-player game, when I went to, like, rule or, like, game type or game setting, something like that, starting a brand new game, it said something like, to me, you don't have any expansions, you don't have any other game types you can try. But I didn't probe deeply because I was trying to start a game.
Hmm. Interesting.
Yeah, the new one, Gathering Storm, does anybody have that?
No, haven't tried.
Yeah, neither do I.
Yeah, no, like, that's the newest one, right, that just came out recently.
On my Steam library, it just says, you know, Civilization 6. Unlike Civ 3, it lists all the expansions that I have. So I'm not certain that I do or don't have any expansions.
That's actually a change that happened after Civ 4. Civ 4, if you had expansions for Civ 4, it showed up in Steam as, like, with all the expansions that were there for Civ 4, you could have like 10, 12 different entries in your Steam library for different, like, expansions of Civ 4. But with Civ 5, there's only one entry, even though there were multiple expansions. So it might be that it's just...
That's a good improvement. I like it. It's not even mentioned in the title. You know, it doesn't even say, like, I have Civ 6 Rise and Fall. But, hey, what do I know?
So I think in our podcast, when we talked about your favorite games, Slim, you mentioned, like, your general history with Civ, but can you just brief summary, like me and Harvey did, what's your history with the games?
Yeah, absolutely. I also don't think I had ever played Civ 1, but back when I was younger, you know, like, I don't know, maybe elementary or middle school, one of my uncles, he played games. Yeah, and he had a, you know, as an adult, he had a computer they played games on. They were, you know, older 90s games. But I went over to he lived in Chicago. I went and visited him once, and he showed me Civ 2, and I really, really liked it. And back then, you know, there wasn't DRM or anything like that. So he made me a copy of the Civ 2 CD, and I took it home and installed it and played it and played that pretty regularly. Probably even throughout middle school, probably until Civ 3 came out, whenever that was. And I put in tons of time and always played humongous, epic, you know, huge, like, you know, campaign-style single-player games against all these computers. Did the exact same thing with Civ 3 when that came out. Bought all the expansions to Civ 3 and kept that going. Tons of time I put in and learned every single nuance of every single number of every single unit. And then when Civ 4 came out and everybody in college was playing Civ 4, I had so much inertia of Civ 3, I kind of never switched. And then same thing with Civ 5, I bought it when it was on sale once because it was like really, really low price. And I was like, I love the Civ games. Yeah, I'll play Civ 5 at some point. You know, let me just finish this Civ 3 game that I've got started. you know, and fast forward like 10 years and I've never, ever, ever started that Civ 5 game, even though I own it. And then, you know, recently when we all wanted to try to start a game up, you know, I was willing to jump on for my friends and to do a joint, you know, game while we're here in quarantine. And I like Civ 6. I do a good job. I have a few things, you know, that I don't love. A couple things I think are way better. A couple things I think were maybe just a couple were real problems. But overall, it does a great job. A lot of good improvements. You know, I never saw Civ 4 in action at all. I played a couple hours of Civ 5 just to test it out once. So I can see some of the things that it brought along from the earlier games in the franchise. But, you know, they do good. I don't know that I'd ever open up Civ 3 again.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Oh, wow. That, strong words.
That's impressive recommendation.
It's the next game. Like, I mean, I guess if I'm trying to think of other games in similar franchises, you know, once Master Ryan 2 came out, did I go back and play Master Ryan 1?
I mean, was a night and day difference. I mean, I guess between Civ 3 and Civ 6, that is also a night and day difference.
Yeah.
The big part is, you know, from 5 to 6 was a big change, actually.
Really? See, to me, this feels exactly like 5, whereas 3 to 5 was a huge change. So many of the things that are big fundamental differences in game mechanics between Civ 6 and Civ 5, a large percentage of them were introduced or done in some way, shape, or form in 5. So since I've only played, you know, 5 hours of Civ 5, but like 10,000 hours of Civ 3, all those differences were huge, stark contrasts when I played Civ 5 for a second. Now that I've played Civ 6 for more time and, you know, I'm getting to understand all the mechanics, all the differences from Civ 3 that were in Civ 5, I say, well, at least I've seen this once before. So I am noticing all the similarities between 5 and 6, mostly because of the big change from 3 to 5, right? All of those things that 5 changed, anything that they kept in 6, even if 6 added other things, anything they kept from 5 into 6, to me, feels like brings 5 and 6 closer together because I spent so much time in Civ 3, which is a larger jump away.
Oh, and I'm thinking of mechanics. I was thinking of mechanics more because you're right, actually. 5 and 6 have very similar mechanics. 6, they changed the aesthetics to make it seem more... Like, the complaint is it seems less realistic or less... Like, it's more artsy, like, with the map changes and things. But mechanics, you're right.
Right, and those are the things that I am looking at, looking forward, noticing differences tend to focus more on mechanics.
Okay, player. I want to get into this, but first we need to hear from Professor Q about how he grew up with Civilization. And then we can really get into like the differences in what we've been playing and what we like and dislike about these. So, Professor?
Well, unlike all you youngins, I did start with Civ 1. And I feel bad for y'all because you missed out on having Krusty the Clown, the settler, for literally my entire life up until maybe about a couple years ago when I tried playing Civ 1 again. I literally thought the settler was some kind of weird clown. I'm sending you guys a picture so that you guys can see what I'm talking about. And I want your thoughts after you look at this as to what you think it actually is supposed to be, the settler.
Yeah, okay, I can see like this blue-haired guy.
Yeah, right?
Wait, in the middle, that thing? I mean, now that you mention it, I can tell what I think it is supposed to be. You know, now you say, hey, this is a settler, try to figure it out. But I understand upon first glance, it's some sort of upside-down Pac-Man monster.
Okay, I get it now. It's upside up.
It's got a mouth. It's got, like, shoulder pads.
No. Oh, wait, is it... flip it upside down.
Is it like the... It looks like a Halo Master Chief mask guy. Is that what I'm looking at?
The little blue guy in the square?
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
it's a wagon. I see it now.
It's a covered wagon.
Yes, it is.
It is a covered wagon, I'm pretty sure. But I did not know this. My entire I had this revelation like a couple years ago. But that was Civilization to me growing up. We, you know, I lived in relative isolation. not a bunker, but we can call it the bunker for purposes of simplicity. And this one person showed up at some point in time and had this on floppy disk and installed it on our ancient computers. And it was like, I just hung out at school forever because they had computers and we could play this. I didn't get a computer until like 96 or something like that. And by that point in time, I think we were onto Civ 2, maybe. But yeah, sunk a lot of hours into 2. Never played 3, actually. Played some 4, played a lot of 5. And 6 is, you know, I'm still relatively new to it. I think that after your enthusiasm for this, Slim, for 3, I tried to go back and play 3 because I picked up Civ 3 Complete or something like that on some sale at some point.
Yeah.
But it's really dense. Like, it's not intuitive to me.
What?
To playing Civ 3. I know that you spend a lot of time in the Civilopedia, and maybe everything is very explicitly laid out in the Civilopedia if you know where to look for it. But it was a little obtuse trying to get into it, and then I was just like, I'm just going to go back to 5. This was pre-6.
Interesting.
Yeah, like for me, I'm not a big deep dive sort of person in these sorts of strategy games. So like I am very surface level when I play these, which makes me a bad player a lot of the time. But I feel like Civ 6 has a lot that's very easy to understand. Like, all right, you build your city, you build districts, and the campus district gives you science, and the encampment district gives you military stuff, and, you know, the entertainment hub gives you entertainment. And there's just, like, it's very easily delineated because of how they organize, like, districts, as opposed to previous civs, where there was just a shit ton of buildings you could build. And I was like, okay, I'll build the fastest building that I can every time and just reap whatever rewards I can get out of that.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting because I had the exact... I mean, I guess this is the difference between somebody who likes to just kind of dive in and play the game without a whole lot of preamble and somebody like myself or probably Slim who just gets caught up in the minutiae. But my reaction to Civ 6 was, I have no idea where to put these districts. I've got all these adjacency bonuses, but if I put this here, is something going to happen down the line where I have essentially blocked myself off from doing something that I want to do? I don't know.
Turns
where
out, yes.
Wonders could potentially go. And I just, you know, like there was definitely some paralysis there switching over to 6 where I was like, I don't know what to do. So I have played the beginning of Civ 6 a lot. I don't think I've ever finished a game of Civ 6. Ever.
I mean,
despite 116 hours.
But we don't know how many of those hours are actually spent doing things in Civ 6. I kind of like that, though. I like that the fact that because I don't know everything, so my civilization strategy is build all the fucking wonders. Like, that's what I do. I don't care if it helps my civilization. I don't care if it's something that I don't get any bonus for. I just want, like, my city to be surrounded by the Great Pyramids and the Lighthouse and the Colossus and the Hanging Gardens and just...
Why?
Drop all that shit. Because I like Wonders, you know? Like, Seven Wonders is one of my favorite board games, not just because I like the mechanics, because I like the Wonders. One of my favorite authors, Matthew Riley, he wrote a book called Seven Ancient Wonders, and basically one of the reasons he became my favorite author is because that first book is an action book centered around the Seven Ancient Wonders. So
it's purely aesthetics. It's not win the game mode in your mind.
No, yeah, I'm purely just... Yeah, okay. Give me wonders. And so, like, I started a game, I think it's one of the Chinese leaders that gives you, like, bonuses to the early wonder building. Like, and I'm playing that one in single player mode. Just because, and I'm just, like, loading up on all nothing but wonder special abilities. And I've kind of fucked myself because I built all these districts, but like certain wonders need districts plus like a space next to them that's a specific desert tile fucking.
And that's why I was so paralyzed. I was like, what am I giving up?
So I really enjoy that mechanic here in like Civ 6, which is to say, yes, for an optimizer, this game would be awful because you have to plan. Do you put a district down? Or there are specific wonders that need specific locations, must be adjacent to this district or so forth. The way I play this game is I just say, screw it, And some things are simply just not going to be available to me, and some things are, but I don't plan for it at all.
That sounds like you.
Yeah, that that tracks.
It's totally reasonable that, you know, one could say, hey, I'm putting this district down, so some things will not be available for me later on. I mean, that's both this game and life. But if I don't know, like Professor Q said, if I don't know what I'm giving up, how can I possibly make a decision? Right? I don't mind giving things up. It makes sense. Right? Of course, I mean, even, you know, at the beginning of the game, do you build a warrior or a settler? I mean, of course, everything, you know, comes with you know, costs and benefits. But I don't know. And the Civ 6 is not good at telling you what's going to happen and what's going to be necessary and what kind of things you should be thinking about now. If you want to play to the end with the space race, it makes sense to understand what that will entail. I mean, that doesn't happen in real life, but I'm not playing real life. I'm playing a computer game. So I, you know, I've played one game so far where I got to the very, very, very end. I mean, the game isn't over in any shape or form. I've only killed two of my opponents, but I've already researched, you know, 20 future technologies because everything is done on my tracks. And only by getting there did I get to see what the placement districts means, right? There are some regional effects that it doesn't hint at or let you know at all. That aside from adjacency bonuses, for instance, proximity to other cities matters a significant amount. But you don't know that until you get to that age, which is extremely, I don't know what the adjective is, but, you know, which I strongly, strongly dislike. I don't know if hate's the right word, but I mean, it literally decreases my enjoyment significantly. Because I sacrificed something without knowing that I was sacrificing it.
But
without being able to weigh costs and benefits. The fun for me in playing strategic games is making strategic choices and saying, you know, will my choice to build a settler pan out because I, you know, think that's the right choice for me? If I didn't know what a settler did, I would not be a good choice to ask me, would I like to build a settler?
But now that you've played to the end, the next time you play Civ 6, you know all these things, right?
I know the things I have learned, yes. But the point of the Civilopedia should be to ensure that I don't need to play a game where I don't know anything. My first game can be a known one. Not everyone needs to do that. I have no problem with people who aren't me playing one time or 25 times and learning it through that. But me, I want to learn and know and not have to play any games where I make a settler not knowing what it does.
So if you're one of those settler, people that reads the instruction manual before you build something.
Yes.
That's a joke.
Okay.
I do that too.
Yay. And granted, you know, playing Civilization is not the same as building a bed. But, you know, Harvey had mentioned optimizers. I am an optimizer in real life more than I should be. I acknowledge this. But a game like Civ, a turn-based strategy game, seems like the perfect both opportunity and platform for an optimizer, right? When I play StarCraft, which is also a strategy game, but very real time, and, you know, no chance to think about anything because the Zerg are killing you right now, you know, would I like to optimize? Sure, but really I just need to spam Marines or whatever. This is a game where every turn I can spend 25 minutes looking up adjacency bonuses if I need to decide
where to put
the campus. But the thing is that And I did, and I put the campus in a good spot. And then, you know, 200 turns later, it turns out that was a horrible spot. Because tell you about these things, and it should. So.
But it was a good spot at the time.
I mean, it was a good spot for that short-term bonus, but it should be my strategic decision about whether I think it's a good spot in reality, knowing what I'm gaining now and giving up later. That's the whole point of strategic decisions.
So I guess in terms of the function of the Civilopedia. For you, you want it to be laying out all the mechanics of the game so that you can kind of front load that before you play.
Correct.
But for the developers of Civ 6, my assumption is that they want to make the beginning of the game as inviting as possible, and the Civilopedia, I guess, as kind of colorful and fluffy. I don't know what they want to do with the Civilopedia. But they're banking on people like you playing enough of the game that you get past that hurdle of not knowing what the strategically best decision is. Whether that's a good choice on their part or not, I think they have opted to make kind of the appearance in the front end more inviting to people who aren't willing to put in that kind of time. and they're just kind of relying on the fact that the Slims of the world are going to obsess over this and figure it out and then keep playing because they've already sunk 100 hours in a week.
Yeah. Right. I mean, clearly I do keep playing. I'm not condemning this game at all. You know, there I could talk for way longer about so many great choices and wonderful mechanics and improvements. Absolutely. I do not mean to, you know, to bemoan this game. Just as an optimizer, I was disappointed that I couldn't read everything about everything I need to know in the Civilopedia before I play my first game and therefore come into it with knowledge of the kind of choices that I want to make already done. You know, as you said, Professor, that's a choice they made. Was it a reasonable one? Maybe, you know, maybe they didn't want to spend, you know, 500 hours of dev time programming the Civilopedia. That's okay. It just means that I, you know, was disappointed every time I found out something down the line that I wish I had known when I had played it first. That's all.
See, for me, like, I view this game as like a narrative. I've created a civilization, and like over time, they're going to make choices where some choices are good in this time and era, but like 500 years later, oh yeah, that probably wasn't a great idea, and we're not going to be able to build like a Taj Mahal here or something. But like my civilization didn't know that 500 turns ago or 500 years ago.
So you're role playing your civilization.
Yes. Yeah, that's like real life. I don't need a game that mirrors real life. I have real life for that.
Trust Harvey Z to turn civilization into a role-playing game.
Harvey Z turns everything into that sort of thing. So while we're on this subject, I told you a little bit about how I play Civ, which is I go for all the wonders. There isn't really any rhyme or reason, although I like to go for specific ones with my civilization sometimes. But I'm also like very much a pacifist. I will always go for like culture victories, or I'm a fan of spamming religious units now. Like I really like getting high religion and just like taking everybody over with my religion that is named something really stupid. Like I picked the Leo symbol and named my religion Mufasa in my single player game, and I'm just like spamming everything despite the fact that Rome hates me for doing it. So what kind of games do you guys normally play? Like, I know what Slim is going to answer, because we all know how Slim plays.
So a quick question about this whole religion thing. Have you set your settings in Civ 6 to always be daytime?
What do you mean?
Because it dynamically changes time. You know, like it will be dusk, or it's nighttime, or it's daytime. Is it perpetual daytime for you?
I think so, because I haven't altered any settings. And I haven't seen any of that.
So I just was wondering, because I wasn't sure if you were trying to spread your religion to everything the light touches.
Okay,
but I had to do it. I had to do it.
That it was a long road for a short joke. Okay, all right. So Slim, tell us about how you play, and then we'll get to Harvey and Professor Q.
So how I play, like, strategic choices, right, so you overall like vision war. Of my empire? I did in Civ 3, but not in Civ 6. And like, as I had mentioned earlier to you, T-Man, about this long-running game that I've already gotten to the end of all my tracks, it wasn't till like I was at the end of the, you know, atomic or information age and had all these high-tier units that I even started attacking anybody. And I can certainly, you know, I have a hypothesis on the reason behind that, especially compared to my Civ 3 play style, which is, you know, kill everybody really quickly. But clearly I'm an optimizer in terms of, you know, like, micromanager for my cities, right? So every single turn, I will reassign my people working in my city to the hexes and tiles that I want to give me the extra one food I need this turn or something like that. Every time. It's way harder to do in Civ 6 than Civ 3, but not impossible. So because of that, I want to have everything improved, right? I want all the bonuses and all the max productivity and everything of all of my cities. I want all my cities to have every single possible building and resource and district and everything so that I can have five cities and they're as productive as, you know, 30 low-level cities, that kind of thing. Which is why I end up with, you know, a few high-level units and not a ton of horsemen. In Civ 3, that's really easy. The game is long, It doesn't take very long to build either units or buildings, right? You can spend, if I have my city build every single building in the game, which I do, every single city of mine in Civ 3 always did, you still spend way more than 50% of the time not building those buildings. You have plenty of time to do other things. Gotcha. In Civ 6, you have like 0% time to do anything else. If you spend all your time building every building in every district and getting every improvement and every buff and every bonus, you actually have no time to build any units, which is what I do. I just, all my cities are maxed out culture and mines and mountains and pyramids and everything you could ever want. And the only units I have are like the three warriors that I had at the beginning of the game that I've just paid to upgrade into three tanks or something.
Interesting.
Yeah. And so I did the same thing in Civ 3. I just had plenty of time to kill everybody after that. In Civ 6, I don't. So I don't. And that's why I maxed out the tech tree and maxed out the civs tree, because all of my buildings were like at 100, you know, food and 100 production and could do everything and anything. And I was, you know, getting all these, what's the civic bonuses, right, on my government policies that gave me bonuses to resources, right? I wasn't getting bonuses to attacking because I had no units, right? Why would I use up one of my slots? I had literally one tank that was just killing barbarians. All right. of my slots were, you know, plus to wonders, plus science for trade routes, plus, you know, culture for districts, whatever. So that each of my cities could really pump out resources, you know, get max on all these stats of all these things. But there's a ton of stuff to build. And each one of these districts has like three buildings on each of them. And so I never, you know, each one of them still just spends the entire time improving itself. And I ended up with this really, really, really high, powerful in terms of, you know, tech and culture civilization. You know, and it'd be hard to kill me because I have high tech, so all my my cities are defensible. But I had very few units, and so I, even though I was at war with some people who, you know, disliked the fact that I had more tech than them or whatever their reason was, we never attacked anybody until the end of the game when I was finally done researching and I said, okay, I'll do something now. What should I do with my tanks? Which was, as you pointed out, not really how I played Civ 3. With Civ 3, you know, ranking up my cities gave them so many bonuses to production or whatever that they could easily build whatever the newest high-tech building is and have plenty of time to turn out cavalry, and I would just stomp over everybody. And there weren't, you know, penalties for killing people like there are in Civ 6, diplomatically, I mean.
I have a couple of questions.
Easy. Yeah, sure. Go ahead, Professor.
So, one, what level of difficulty did you play Civ 3 at?
Civ 3, I gradually increased it, so I was at probably 75% of the way down the way. Because there's, you know, like 8 settings just like there are in
the other one. So, like, Emperor or something.
Yeah, so Emperor, I don't remember. Yeah, something like that. I don't remember the name, but it was, you know, more than halfway. But
I'm wondering to what extent your ability to do that might have had, that flexibility that you have might be attributed to your difficulty level. And I wonder also, it's possible, as I said, I didn't play Civ 3, it might just be that military is a better ultimate strategy for that. I'm wondering, my second question though was, if you're in future tech, why haven't you done, for example, a science victory? Do you feel like you have to kill everybody? Is that
In Civ 6, you mean?
Yeah, in Civ 6.
I mean, having played only this one game, you know, to the information age, I think science victory was build a spaceship or something. Is that right?
Something like that.
It's a little bit trickier.
How is that fun? That's not fun. I don't want to build. It's not. I'm not racing to an end game wonder. I'm playing Civilization. The point is to kill everybody. For me.
See, that's the slim I was expecting.
Yeah, I just don't do it when I play Civ 6. But the goal is still the same.
Well, I mean, you do it. You just wait until the very end before you
start. I mean, it takes a long time because everybody keeps hating on me, and it's so hard to hold and keep cities right. So that's another thing. In Civ 3, you know, rolling over a city wasn't trivial. I mean, but there was no, it was only, you know, only slightly harder than rolling over an army. Whereas in Civ 6, oh my gosh, I had a whole ton of tanks. I had the best. Mm-hmm. Heavy cavalry unit ever, and I was doing zero damage to these cities. And I had to, you know, get some siege units, which, I mean, makes sense. Like I said, you know, like real life, that all makes sense, and then I could easily do it. But it's just, I was not used to that, and so I couldn't roll over the people very quickly. And there were humongous penalties of taking everybody's city, and I was like, this is I thought what the point was to win, to kill people.
Well,
clearly there are ways to win, but it feels more like it doesn't just feel like, hey, there's five ways to win. It feels like there's five ways to win and you can't do it militarily, which is weird because I would have expected that to be one of the reasonable choices.
See, this is where I firmly disagree with you. I think that first off, early aggression in Civ 6 doesn't have the same penalties that, you know, aggressing towards people has when you've got, you know, the League of Nations or whatever that council thing is. I don't remember what it's called. Is it the UN? It might be the UN. But certainly early aggression does not give you the same level of penalties as you have in the late game. And yeah, you're going to have to give up on optimizing your city in order to pump out units because you need to, it's a trade-off in terms of what you are putting your production towards. But that enables you in the early game, if you do an early, some form of early aggression, to potentially get a bunch of cities that you then would be able to grow and potentially cover more ground and have access to more resources than you would if you were just focusing on optimizing the cities that you could afford to build on your own.
But it seems like any city that I take over is literally barely usable until I have sued for peace or killed the other person. Like they have zero growth and 75% loss to everything. They're basically non-cities. So what's the point?
Civ 6 has a lot of more focus on not the combat.
I think
Civ 6 in a lot of ways has tried to make the non-war game the equivalent or like as interesting as the war game to almost the detriment of the actual combat itself, where like you still have all these crazy units you can build, but it's not as advantageous as building a harbor, which allows you to get, you know, the next thing and adding to your trade routes and everything. Harvey Z, we haven't heard from you in a little bit. How do you normally play Civ aside from, you know, role-playing it like it's your baby?
So, like, with this one, and I'll add to the war thing, because the one person we're missing from this who also played Civ, who had the same issue you did, was Generic uh-huh. Johnson. I convinced him to play Civ 5 from Civ 4. He loves Civ 4. He's like you with the Civ 3 and the older games. When he played Civ 5 and then, like, trying to get into this, the AI crushed him because that was a deliberate choice that they made in 5 and in 6. They smartened up the AI a lot more, where he would do stuff like, let's build a peace treaty, builds up his army, and then puts it right on their borders. And then when the peace treaty expires, he rolls over them. Or, like, one turn before he's about to go to war, he'll ask them for all their resources. They trade with him all their gold, so they have nothing in their economy, and then he rolls over them. The AI in Civ 5 and 6, they've made much, much better, where if you do that to one person, the rest of the teams and the rest of the world, I guess, is aware that you can do this stuff and will treat you as a backstabber, will not trade with you, and will have much more severe war penalties. Because what I argued with him on this is, I think it's a little bit cheap, the domination victories, because you're just basically steamrolling people who are, if they didn't focus on war, then how else can they defend against you? Civ 6 is really nice for that. Yes, if you have just a few troops and a really developed city, you can still defend against a huge, massive army for a longer period of time than expected. And so that's why when I play this game, I do what you're doing or you're discovering right now, which is I do culture and tech. Culture and tech, because if you have technology but you don't have massive numbers, you can still, with one or two really highly upgraded troops, fend off an attack until you need to switch your economy or your machine to a domination style in order to fend off an attacker. And that's why I think Civ 6 is really nicely balanced for that reason. The cost of it, though, is, again, there's so many different ways to play. The one thing that I dislike is the religion. Religion has gotten so much better in terms of how you can play with it, but I hate it so much. So I tend to avoid religion completely and pick the civilizations that don't have to focus on that, so I can focus on science and I can focus on culture.
Says Mr. Herpes, and you're definitely going to get mine.
So that's why, like, that's my view towards the religion thing. It's like, I'm going to create a stupid religion thing and I'm just going to spread it in that way. Because if you actually play religion all the way through, it becomes like a militaristic whole style that I just try to avoid inevitably.
I don't remember which Civ it was, but whichever was the first one that introduced culture, where, like, you could like expand your borders based on how powerful your culture was, and you would just like take over other people's cities because your culture was so strong.
Yes.
Like you didn't even have to go into combat. Was that
I think that was four? Four. I think
that
was
no, three four. Did that. Three did that. You could do that in three.
Okay. Maybe it was whichever.
Not very common, but you can.
Yeah. Like I think maybe in four they made it easier to do. I don't remember, but like I remember being upset about five changing how culture worked, because that was my favorite, like kind of like pacifists. I don't need to go to war. I'm just going to install a McDonald's in every one of your cities, and then you'll obey me sort of strategy.
And one thing is, in Civ 6, actually, they've made the science victory a lot harder. It's now not just build a spaceship, but it's you have to complete like three or four different space objectives. You have to do a whole bunch of stuff. So if you, at the end game, really want to go science, you do have to devote everything to science. The best way to stop a science player, just go to war with them.
Interesting. Okay, so what about you, Professor Q? How is your normal Civ strategy? Like, what do you like doing?
So I'd say I'm somewhere between... I'm somewhere short of slim level extremities, but I really like having numbers become bigger numbers. So I guess my favorite thing about the modern Civ games has been the differentiation between the civilizations and how you can build something synergistic that's unique to your civilization, because you get these particular kinds of tile bonuses or adjacency bonuses or things like that. And I really love being able to play off of that. So not a big fan of a lot of unit management. So war is less fun for me because I feel like it really drags. You're just like moving things around the board all the time. But not every civilization really has that kind of benefit. Like somebody was saying earlier, the religion, for example, there's certain civilizations where that is what they do, right? And if I'm, they don't really get great bonuses for other things. They get great bonuses for religion, and maybe that's not what I'm necessarily looking for. I like civilizations that tend to have like tile bonuses or adjacency bonuses or unique buildings or things that will allow me to do something strategic that will allow my numbers to get bigger. Ultimately, it's about making the numbers get bigger.
Yeah. I do like that each civilization feels different in this game. Like in our game that we're playing, I think I'm Egypt. That isn't the one we like stopped playing, right? I think we're... That's the one.
Yeah, that's the most recent one.
Yeah. Yeah. And like in with Egypt, I'm making like 120 gold a turn or something. And then in my single player game, I've playing the Chinese one, and I'm making like 10 gold a turn, but my production is a lot better, and like I have these wonder bonuses. But like Egypt, all their bonuses are monetary, so I focused on trading and doing all that stuff. And like I don't need to produce anything, I just buy what I need. And that is something that really I feel like didn't stand out to me as much in previous civs, where like, yeah, there was like a special, you know, musket man unit I could get as the United States, but I never felt like I needed to play towards the civilization bonuses, where in this one, the bonuses feel like apparent and really make each playstyle different.
Completely agree. Absolutely. Yeah,
Civ 1, literally, it was just the city names. That was it. It was no difference. Wow. So we've come a long way since then.
So I want to, I guess, not close out, but we're getting close to the ending. So I want to kind of hit another topic real quick. So what is your favorite civilization leader, or like what are your of all the Civ games you've played, not just Civ 6, but like which one did you really like the most playing as? Harvey Z, why don't we start with you?
I realized what the answer is for 6. I don't remember what it used to be for 5. 6, it's actually Gorgo, the Spartans.
Oh, really?
And I'm currently playing them in our game. The reason for it is they mix genres. Every time they kill a unit, they gain culture for however much superiority they have over that unit. And so it's a way to get culture through military. And then the other thing that they have is their bonus is they get an extra wildcard policy for their governments. And that's enough all I need for the rest of it.
Oh, that's nice. Really nice. Yeah, yeah, having extra policies is cool. Didn't you really like the Merchant of Venice?
In Civ 5? Because it was so different from the rest of the game. Yeah.
Yeah.
Where you couldn't build settlers, and so you could only have one city, but you could turn every city-state into a city of yours, basically.
Yeah, yeah, you could just basically buy them out.
And so that was a very pure economic and culture one, because you wanted to pump out culture to just convert people. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. What about you, Slim?
Well, so I've only played, you know, even though I've put in some time in Civ 6, it's been, you know, majority on this one very long game. So I haven't played a ton of leaders. In Civ 3, I played as the Americans, partially because I liked being able to pronounce my city names so that I could find them easily. But honestly, I played a bunch of leaders and actually found that the Americans had my favorite combination of adjectives. I forget what they were called, but every race in Civ 3 had two civilization focuses, right? You could be agricultural or industrial or expansionist or scientific or religious, things like that. And they had small but forever effects, right? It was just like, you know, your builder always works twice as fast, or your scouts always go twice as fast, or, you know, science is always cheaper, stuff like that. And my two favorite were industrial and expansionist, and the only one that was that was American. So I played as Americans all the time in Civ 3 for those two civilization buffs. With gotcha. Civ 6, and of course, as we know, I played domination style all the time for Civ 3. Mm-hmm. So in all the games I had started in Civ 6, I picked a different militaristic, early military type person because, A, I didn't know if I was going to last all the way to the information age, and I played Sumeria a lot, which gives the strongest initial first starting unit for attacking, and then I played Scythia, which gives you like double production on horses, and all your units are better at killing wounded units, and so I was like, oh, that's cool, I'll kill all the barbarians or whatever. But again, for both of these games, I rarely ever produced any units and almost never went to war, so why should I get bonuses to produce units that I never do? So I just started a game being Rome, because I actually went through and looked at the leader stats about not what I think I want or how I played Civ 3, but how I've played the past three games of Civ 6, and they haven't been early military. I don't start doing anything until after I've already teched up. And so I went with him because you've got more roads, you've got initial monuments, which is good for spreading, and you've got some trading posts and stuff, things that I wanted more of in the beginning of the game. At the end of the game, would it be nice to have, you know, better military? Probably. But I like early spreading out. I like early expansion. I also made, you know, dozens and dozens of cities in Civ 3. So in Civ 6, you know, civilizations that are starting out with bonuses or advantageous to spreading early with extra settlers seemed good. So we'll see how it goes. This is my first time not picking a militaristic focused civilization.
It's always good to spread early. Professor Q, what about you?
So I haven't played as a huge diversity of leaders at this point. Recently, I played a game as Brazil, and I really like that because he has a lot of Pedro II has a bunch of adjacency bonuses for like jungles, which aren't usually very useful. And I imagine I'm going to love the Dutch if I ever get around to playing as them, because they have like serious. Being on a river is really great. All those tiles get some kind of bonus. In Civ 5, I feel like Kamehameha was one where I really enjoyed that, because you got to put all the... As long as you had terrain that allowed it, if you could like really spam the Mauis and get like a gajillion culture, which was great. But you really needed to have like smaller land masses, or at least ones where water was all around it. Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, like I kind of like the Wonder Guy. I'd like it more if the bonus lasted longer, but it's only ancient and classical wonders, so it's like okay for the early game, but the bonus wears out once you go further in. There was one in Civ 5 that I really liked. I think it was one of the Indian tribes. I want to say the Shoshone. And I think it was either the Shoshone or the Iroquois. I don't remember which one it was.
Yeah, I'm trying to think, because you and I both used to play as the Native Americans. I liked one and you liked the other one.
Yeah, I think I like the Shoshone because they had the ability to choose what reward they get from ancient ruins. I think that was...
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that was why I love playing as them, because I would just like send a bunch of scouts out in the early game and just get all sorts of cool shit that I wanted at the very beginning. But yeah, so is there anything else Civ related you guys wanted to talk about? I tried to kind of hit a little bit of everything, and obviously this is a very specific episode for anyone who wants to hear about Civilization. We got a little technical in the middle there, but still had a fun time discussing our Civ strengths and weaknesses.
Yeah.
Anything else to add?
It kind of makes me want to play more multiplayer Civ with you guys. So
so we're probably going to do that right after we log out of this podcast, aren't we?
Yeah.
I mean. All right. So before we sign off, we're getting close to end time here, but I wanted to do a little something. Harvey Z.
Yo.
We have been doing a trivia face-off between me and you. How confident do you feel, having been made a gamer, that you can go up against Slim and Professor Q and score better than them?
I feel like I can beat Slim. Professor Q, if it's modern stuff, I might have a chance. I don't know. It's been a while. I feel confident against Slim, though.
Okay.
Call him a shot.
All right. So I am going to take 6 cards out here, and basically what I'm going to do is there are 2 questions on each card. Mm-hmm. So the way it's going to work is each of you will get 2 cards, so 4 questions total. The person I'm asking will get the right of first refusal, basically. Like, they get 1 answer. If it's correct, they get the point. If it's not correct, either of the other 2 people can answer if they know it. I think I'll say, what I'll say is 2 points if you get it correct when it's your turn, 1 point if you steal it. And we'll see how this goes. You guys ready for some trivia?
Is the student time-based? Do I need to buzz in, or?
I think I'll just do first come, first served. Whoever says it after they get it wrong. If you know it, just shout in.
Shout in the answer, or shout in like that we know it and wait for you to call on us. We do have a server here that we can just push, like, hey, and then buzz in on the...
I mean, I guess we can try that. We'll see how it goes. Yeah, just type X into the server. That way, whoever gets it first. So Harvey Z, since you called your shot, we'll start with you. And this first question, we'll see how well you've been paying attention. Okay. Which 2017 game by Team Ninja is very loosely based on the real life of the English samurai William Adams?
Oh God, we have talked about this. Because I complained about him being like, he was one of your game choices, wasn't he, of your top 100 games?
No.
No? I remember bitching about this for some reason. There's 2 choices in my head, but I don't want to give it away to the... Is it the, I don't know how to say it, Neo? N-I-
Yes, that is correct.
Yes! Not the Sekiro Must Die or whatever Shadows say. Yes, okay.
Yeah, it was Neo. Good job.
Boom, on the board.
Yeah, thank goodness you got that, because I was definitely not stealing it.
Okay, let's see here. Who wants to be next, Slim or Professor Q?
I'll take it.
Okay. Which 1983 Laserdisc arcade video game was animated by Don Bluth?
Oh, that would be Dragon Quest.
No.
Oh, what?
You are half right.
Oh, I got the name wrong, didn't I?
Yeah.
Harvey?
Adventure Quest?
No.
Fuck.
Slim, you got an answer?
No, I don't know it. But I think if Professor Q knows and just got the name wrong, he should be able to get a redeeming 1 point.
Okay, Professor Q?
It's killing me. I can see the animation in my brain. Because it's very distinctive.
Just draw the animation and we'll give you credit.
It featured in Stranger Things.
I don't watch the TVs.
It recently got announced that Ryan Reynolds is going to be starring in a movie based off of it.
Really?
Really?
Yep. Last chance, Professor Q.
It's Dragon's Lair.
Correct.
Yes. Okay, I'll only take 1 point for that because I missed my initial.
Also, I just we're doing gentleman's agreement that there's no Google or
of course,
looking up this stuff. Like this is knowledge based.
Yeah, we are men of honor.
Okay.
Do lies become us?
All right. Let's see here. Slim.
Yo.
In the 2015 horror game Until Dawn, which actor provides the voice and motion capture for Dr. Hill?
Oh, God. I don't actually know who any of the actors were. Played the game.
Yeah. You were definitely there for when we played it.
Voice and motion capture?
Yes.
I'm going to say...
Just for reference, it's the guy that the psychiatrist that's talking to you between...
Oh, okay. It's the guy outside the main plot line of the
right,
story.
Right, yeah.
Knipperly. Oh, man. Oh, because I was I don't know who else. I was thinking of maybe like the crazy guy who had, the flamethrower or something. Okay, so the psychiatrist guy. God, I don't remember.
Ooh.
But it's going to be a different kind of answer than I answered before.
Yeah.
I don't know. He almost reminded me of like Willem Dafoe or something, but I don't know that Willem Dafoe does voice capture video games.
You never know.
Yeah, all right. So we'll go with him.
No, that is not correct. Harvey or Professor, you going to chime in on this one?
I can make a random guess, but I don't think so.
If it had not been a psychiatrist or somebody normal, I would have had a guess. But I know nothing about this game at all.
Yeah, I have my default guess. I would have said if you hadn't T-Man told me which character it was.
What? Who are you going to guess?
I would have said Mark Hamill.
Oh, okay.
He's in Master of Orion games and some others too, Arkham of course.
I'll go with Tim Curry.
Nope, not Tim Curry.
I'll throw out the one that I really don't think it is. I thought your mocap thing was a hint, so I was going to say Andy Serkis, but. I think it's highly unlikely if it's a non-weird role for that to be.
Yeah, no. The correct answer is Peter Stormare.
I've never even heard of that person.
You might know him as the Russian from Armageddon. He played Zernabog in American Gods. He was one of the eight prisoners who escaped in Prison Break, although I don't remember his name. You'll probably recognize him. He's a character actor. Oh, he played Lucifer in Constantine.
Oh, okay. Well, I saw that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wouldn't have gotten that, though. I certainly wouldn't recognize his name.
Yeah. Okay. All right, moving on. Back to Harvey Z. Second question from your card. What are the inputs for the Konami code?
Okay, it's the order. Up, up, down, down, left, left, right, start. A, B?
Incorrect. You had to get it perfect, and you didn't.
Hmm.
Q? Slim?
Well, I never owned one of these.
Yeah,
fancy
I never
console things, so I don't even know.
Cheat codes. It was against my principles.
I could tell you all the cheat codes to StarCraft on the PC or something, or Age of Empires if you want, but yeah, I got nothing on consoles.
Actually, I probably occasionally use cheat codes on Heroes of Might and Magic. Just for shits and giggles.
All right.
I want to say it's... I'm just going to... I mean, no harm in trying, right? I'm going to say A, B, A, B, up, down, left, right, start, select.
Yeah, it definitely should end in start, select. I agree with you, Professor.
You are also incorrect.
Hmm.
So the correct answer... Slim, are you not answering?
Nah, I mean, I'd just be... pull in Professor Q, and who wants to do that?
All right. The correct answer is up, up, down, down, left, right, B, A, start.
Oh, wow.
Low select?
Wow. Oh, Harvey was close.
Wait.
Oh, yeah.
You have to hit B, then A? You can't do A, B, start. Like, had to be.
You said start A, B as well. Start would have just started the game before the code was finished. You got to know your codes, man.
Okay.
Sorry, that one is very specific. I'm not gonna give you.
I was thinking actually you had to push. I was thinking I was wrong because you had to push all three together or something at the same time.
Nope. It was you just had them out of order. Fun fact: I own the game Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 3: The Manhattan Project for the Nintendo, and in that one, the code was actually up, up, down, down, left, right, A, B start to get into the secret menu. So you could add lives and continues and stuff like that. For some reason, that one was a variation, despite being made by also being made by Konami. Back to Professor Q. In the 1996 survival horror game Resident Evil, protagonist Chris Redfield and Jill Valentine work for Raccoon City's STARS team. What does STARS stand for? Do 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 do. I'm not doing the whole thing. Real thrilling podcast.
Task Force Against Rabid Sapiens.
You know what? I like your enthusiasm on that one. Yeah, it is incorrect.
I've never played the game, so.
Slim, Harvey, any guesses?
No, I only played one Resident Evil game, and it was, you know,
yeah, it's probably something related, like SWAT is whatever SWAT stands for, but like strategic tactical assignment or.
All right. The correct answer is Special Tactics and Rescue Service.
Hey, Harvey, you're close.
Yeah.
All right, so Slim. First appearing in the 1986 game Castlevania, player character Simon Belmont is usually seen wielding which type of weapon named the Vampire Killer?
Oh god, should I know this from Smash Brothers? Was he in Smash Brothers?
I mean, he's been in the most recent Smash Brothers.
I never played as him though. God, what did he have? Presumably he used it in Smash Brothers, right? That was likely one of his moves.
Right.
Vampire Killer, Castlevania, probably something wooden, right?
All right.
I don't know, like a wooden chair?
No, it is not a wooden chair.
Are you sure? I think I got this one.
Professor, for the steal, what you got?
I really hope he doesn't have a secondary weapon, because his primary is a whip.
That is correct. Yeah, it is Castlevania. Most of the Belmonts use a whip as their main weapon.
Does that really kill vampires, though? Whips?
It's called a vampire killer. Clearly, it can kill vampires. Like, they wouldn't call it that if it couldn't. All right, so going into round two, the second set of cards, it's 2 points Harvey Z, 2 points Professor Q, 0 points Slim. Right now, Harvey Z has called his shot. He's ahead. All right. Let's see. Professor Q. Since Harvey Z went first, we're going to go backwards this time. We're going to go Professor Q first, then Slim, then Harvey Z.
Okay. Snake stuff.
This one. Dr. Albert W. Wiley is the robot inventing arch enemy of which video game character?
Come on.
Mega Man.
That is correct.
Or. So
there was bound to be a really easy one in somewhere in here.
I was hoping to get it.
All right. Rockman, if you prefer the.
Yeah, you got it completely covered. But the answer on the card is Mega Man. So.
Sweet.
Yeah.
All right. That is a game Slim. I have played a lot of. Or games I have played a lot of.
Yeah. What?
All right. You might know this one, but I don't actually know. Which real-time strategy game series by Creative Assembly has had entries with Roman, medieval, and Napoleonic settings?
Is this directed at me?
No, this is directed at Slim.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Oh, sorry. It cut out for a second. Could you say the question again, T-Man?
Sure. Which real-time strategy game series by Creative Assembly has had entries with Roman, medieval, and Napoleonic settings?
Roman, medieval, and Napoleonic, three separate ones?
Yes.
Real-time strategy, you said?
I see.
Yes.
Harvey Z's already put in his X because I know this one too. Ugh, beat me to the buzzer.
I don't think that's allowed. In fact, I'm ruling the X has to come in after Slim has answered.
Ooh, nice.
Sorry.
Sorry, Harvey.
Harvey, you can't be. I see how the thing says you're both typing. This is.
It's to simulate the buzzer, right? Because the buzzer's only one button.
Yeah.
All right. T-Man, anyway. Is it Command and Conquer?
That is incorrect.
Harvey
made it in. He made it in. What you got for me?
Total War?
That is correct.
Yeah.
Yes.
I got the first Total War game as a birthday present, and I never played it.
I don't think I've ever played it either, despite I think I own Total War Warhammer or something. I don't know. Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of Total War games. Okay, Harvey Z, to take the lead from Professor Q, a member of the Tojo clan, Kazuma Kiryu is the main protagonist of which PlayStation series?
Why do I keep... Oh, God. Let's see. Of the Tojo clan.
Yes.
Of a PlayStation series.
I thought this was going to... I thought you were going to... It was going to be a Toe Jam and Earl question. Once
that's
you...
why I was like, oh, yeah, no.
No.
I wouldn't set that up. That's like a T-ball for Harvey.
The problem here I have is when they say PlayStation, do they mean PlayStation 1 or the whole Sony franchise?
They mean the whole Sony franchise. I'll go ahead and give that clarification.
Is it the Sekiro Shadows Must Die thing?
Incorrect.
Damn it.
Harvey is out. Slim or Professor Q, any guess?
Could I get the question again?
A member of the Tojo clan, Kazuma Kiryu is the main protagonist of which PlayStation series?
Yeah.
Deafening silence.
Sorry.
So I had a PlayStation back in the bunker for about as long as it took to plug it into the wrong voltage and have it blow out.
Okay. So I guess we're not getting that one. The correct answer is Yakuza.
Oh,
I've heard good things about some of the
Yakuza series.
I've played Yakuza Zero for like a couple hours. It's pretty good. I wish I had more time to get into it. All right, back to Professor Q. Last question. What is the name of the village in which the SNES game Harvest Moon is set?
Oh, God. You'd think I would have played Harvest Moon, given the amount of hours I have sunk into Stardew, but alas, I have not. So we're just going to give it a name. We're going to give it a very uncreative name. We're going to call it Harvest Town.
That is incorrect. I don't see anyone chomping at the bit, or champing at the bit, I guess is the actual term.
Is it?
Slim or Harvey?
Tokyo?
No. What? No.
You know that small village, Tokyo, where they yeah.
from. Yeah. Slim, anything?
No, sorry.
Okay. All right. The correct answer is Flower Bud Village.
My favorite.
I didn't know that one either, but I haven't played Harvest Moon, so.
You said Bud.
Haha, funny. All right, Slim. In reference to Citizen Kane, which cheat code provided players of the 2000 game The Sims with 1,000 simoleons in currency upon its entry?
In reference to Citizen Kane?
Yes.
I have no
idea. I see you, Professor.
Never played any of the Sims games. I didn't even know there was money in The Sims games. I don't know.
You don't have a guess?
Nah.
No? Okay. It looks like Professor Q got it in.
Wait, I got it in there too.
Well, it was right after he said, I don't know.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with the guys. Yeah, I don't know was my answer.
Okay. I assume it's Rosebud.
That is correct.
I have not seen Citizen Kane.
I'm going to protest on that one and say that I was in there before, but fine. I also put it in at the I don't know.
Yeah, I mean,
you can see who's first.
In the actual thing, one person came out first, and that is Professor Q. On my screen, the one that I'm.
Oh, really? Mine has okay.
Yeah, I have an X and then two X's from you.
Yeah. Okay, I have X then Professor Q then mine, but okay, I'll go.
I guess I just have a better internet connection.
Yeah.
Given that we are so geographically close.
All right.
Never had time zone issues before.
I'm going to claim an asterisk here.
So it is currently 5 points, Professor Q, 3 points.
You're right.
Harvey Z, and 0 points for Slim. So Harvey Z has done he's called his shot. He has beat Slim for sure. But we're going to go into a tiebreaker round if he gets this question right. Harvey Z, you ready?
Sure.
Beginning in 1995, which video game series developed by Team 17 features opposing teams of annelids attempting to eliminate each other?
Yes, I love this franchise. Love those antlets. The Worms franchise.
That is correct.
I knew that one. I actually knew that one.
Yay! All right, so now I've got to get a good tiebreaker here.
Back in the game. No asterisks here.
Let's see. I think how I'm going to do this tiebreaker is you're each... I don't know. How? Okay, Slim, how do you think I should do this? Do you think I should give them each a question and they either answer it and get it right, or should I do like a buzzering where you have to chime in?
Unfortunately, with the buzzering in, like, you know, it'll come down time to subjectivity. When do you stop talking? When is the buzzer active?
Yeah, I think the latency issue will forever lead to Harvey Z claiming an asterisk next to my name if we go with the buzzer.
All right, so here's the deal. I've got a card here. I'm going to give one question to each of you. You either get it right or you get it wrong. No stealing, and we'll go until one person gets it right and another person gets theirs wrong.
Okay.
Sounds all right. Good.
Who wants to go first? Just so there's no bias from my part in terms of easiness or hardness of the questions.
I'll defer to you, Q.
Sure. Sure, I'll take it.
Age right. before beauty.
All right. To Professor Q, how many characters does the player choose from in the 1989 classic side-scroller Golden Axe?
No steals.
No steals.
Okay, so there's the dwarf, there's the lady, there's the guy with the axe. No, wait, the axe is with the dwarf. There's three.
That is correct.
Yeah.
Harvey Z, you have to answer this one right to come out ahead, or to come out in a tie. Excuse me. All right, you ready?
Ooh, yeah, sure.
In the insult sword fighting section of the classic adventure game The Secret of Monkey Island, What is the correct comeback to the infamous insult, "You fight like a dairy farmer"?
Your mother is a cow?
Incorrect.
Oh, although that was close. That was a hard one.
Yeah, the correct answer is, "How appropriate, you fight like a cow."
Come on!
That was pretty close.
Oh, man. Yeah. I thought they were going to ask about the orange one, but okay.
Yes, me too. I was so ready. I could do that entire song. I could have gotten every line. I was so hopeful.
All right. Well, there you have it in our first ever trivia off. Professor Q comes out on top in the tiebreaker.
I got to say, I thought that I was going to crush Harvey Z, and I did not. I barely squeaked by.
All right. Well, that was fun. That was a good way to end it. So this went a little longer than I thought it would. But you know what? There's always good to challenge me and my editing skills. So we'll see how this turns out when I put it all together. So to end this, normally I ask where everyone can find everyone. Harvey Z, since you're the regular co-host, we'll start with you. Where can they find you, Harvey Z?
You can find me on Twitter at The Z is silent.
Now, Slim and Professor Q, are there places they can find you, or are you just in the Discord?
There are, but that doesn't mean I remember what my Twitter handle is.
Okay.
No need to visit.
You can find me right here, right now, on this very recording, and that's probably about it.
Actually, okay. I take it back. You can probably find me playing Civ 6 on Steam.
That is true. You can find me on Twitter at Team Man Plays Games. You can find this podcast at Make Me a Podcast. You can always email us at makemeagamerpodcast@gmail.com. And you can always find us in the Discord, although we don't talk a lot, because we've got about 12 different Discords for our friend groups divided for some reason now. And none of them are in my podcast channel. Okay, so that's it. Thank you for joining me, gentlemen, for this podcast experiment, my first time with multiple guests.
Thanks for having us, T-Man.
Oh, yeah, of course. Professor Q, this was your long-time listener, first-time podcaster. Hope you had a fun time.
Yeah, it was great.
Awesome. All right, Harvey Z, you've always got the last word. What do you got for us today?
I actually realized, we should talk about these things more. No, I don't have anything more deeper than that. I was just like, oh, wow, Slim thanked you. Should I be thanking? No. Fuck that.